It's 6:30 and time for Opera on 3 as we join listeners worldwide for a broadcast direct from the Met.
We are live at the Metropolitan Opera House in New York City. I'm Mary Jo Heath, and we are bringing you our first ever Saturday matinee broadcast of Cendrillon, Jules Massenet's ravishing take on the Cinderella story. Joyce DiDonato stars in the title role opposite Alice Coote as Prince Charming. They're joined by Kathleen Kim as the fairy godmother, Laurent Nalry as Cendrillon's father, and Stephanie Blythe as her imperious stepmother. Massenet's bewitching score is in the hands of Maestro Bertrand de Billy. The audience for today's performance also includes live and HD cinema-goers across the globe. And during intermission, HD host Eileen Perez will speak with our stars. Stay with us.
And we'll be rejoining New York in a moment after their short advertising break. The Metropolitan Opera broadcast season is supported by Toll Brothers, the Annenberg Foundation, the Neubauer Family Foundation, and the Vincent A. Stabile Endowment for Broadcast Media, and broadcast here through an arrangement with the European Broadcasting Union. Now let's return to New York to hear Joyce DiDonato and Alice Coote in Massenet's Cendrillon.
I'm Mary Jo Heath, and I'm with our commentator, Ira Siff. Ira, how's this for a happy ending? Massenet's Cendrillon has finally arrived at the Met.
And it's such a gem. It's so full of wit and passion. Massenet wrote it later in his career, so after his hits Manon and Werther, and it's lighter in tone than those operas. He called it a conte de fées, a fairy tale rather than an opera.
But you know, after its premiere in 1899, it left the mainstream repertory for a while until gradually mezzo-sopranos started to champion it, most recently Joyce DiDonato. She's triumphed around the world in this whimsical production by Laurent Pelly, and our audiences have been enraptured.
You know, the stars and the maestro have all raved about how perfectly Pelly's production fits Massenet's music, and I love that about it.
Yeah, well, Pelly's grandmother used to read the original Charles Perrault fairy tale to him. It was a big, old-fashioned book with a red leather cover and cream-colored pages, and that book was his inspiration for this production, and I do mean that literally. Those pages become the walls of the set with a story printed across them, starting with Il était une fois, or Once Upon a Time.
And the opera basically follows Perrault's tale with a few departures. It's worth noting that Massenet, like Rossini in his La Cenerentola, emphasizes Cinderella's kind and loving heart more than her beauty. And this comes through in Cendrillon's music.
Mm-hmm. Well, it's interesting that both Cendrillon and her prince are sung by high mezzo-sopranos, sometimes even sopranos, the prince being a trouser role.
Massenet just loved the female voice. There's also brilliant writing for the fairy godmother, and that's a high coloratura soprano. And on the complete opposite end of the spectrum, the deep, deep contralto of the stepmother.
And of course, there are also the two stepsisters. Now, as for the score, it's very rich with a lot of variety throughout. And some of the humorous parts feel almost like operetta.
Massenet also laces the piece with nostalgia by evoking bygone musical eras. But in the magical passages, he paints impressionistic colors, and the tonal language in the love scenes can even sound like Wagner. Mm-hmm. All this is unified by his own style, so it flows together even when it's full of those contrasts.
And it moves pretty swiftly, especially these first couple of acts. The libretto is by Henri Quin, and it gives some of the familiar characters fanciful names. Cendrillon is called Lucette, her father is Pandolf, and her stepmother, Madame de la Haultière. So, Ira, let's talk through the first act. It's quite faithful to the story as we know it.
Well, the music begins with a brief and majestic faux Baroque prelude evoking the 17th century, the era of Perrault. Then the action begins with a frantic octet for the beleaguered servants of Madame de la Haultière.
They're preparing to get Madame and her two daughters ready for a ball at court that evening. Pandolf has an aria, lamenting that he ever married her. He left behind the quiet country life he had with his daughter, who is terribly mistreated now. Pandolfo resolves to try to assert himself as master of the house.
But then we hear a reprise of that majestic theme of the opening of the opera. We realize that all that bombast is associated with Madame de l'Altière.
And Pandolfo flees. Well, so much for asserting himself. As Cendrillon's stepsisters dress for the ball, their mother instructs them how to attract the prince. Pearls of wisdom like, the ballroom is a battlefield, and don't be ordinary, but don't be too original.
Madame's deep voice carries this trio. Her daughters simply echo her commands. The ensemble builds as the servants comment on how ridiculous the ladies look.
Pandolfo is sad to leave for the ball without saying goodbye to his daughter, but off they go. And then finally, we meet Lucette Cendrillon. She sits alone by the hearth and has a wistful aria as she thinks about the ball.
The aria has the poignant, melancholy tone at which Massenet so excelled. And there's a simple folk-like refrain, stay by the fireside, little cricket, do not envy the butterfly. Then the orchestra shifts the key from minor to major as Cendrillon drifts off to sleep.
And cue the appearance of the fairy godmother. She's with a retinue of spirits, a small female chorus, and she immediately starts bossing them around. They help her create a beautiful ball gown, glass slippers, a carriage, and horses.
The orchestration here is translucent as the fairy godmother expresses herself in intricate coloratura passages. They sail up in gossamer figures that just seem to evaporate into thin air.
And when Cendrillon wakes up, at first, she thinks she's been dreaming. But then she sees she's wearing that beautiful gown and realizes she is going to the ball. The fairy godmother warns Cendrillon to leave the ball before midnight and reassures her that the glass slippers will magically prevent her family from recognizing her. And as the act ends, Cendrillon rides on in the carriage. Now, there will be a brief pause at this point, and we'll talk about Act Two then.
You know, we should mention that the carriage is shaped out of the letter C of the word carrosse, carriage in French, and it's pulled by men costumed as white horses with tailcoats, who also have lettering all over them. There are so many fanciful touches like that in this production.
Yeah, I love how they, like, dance around and paw the dirt like real horses might do there. We mentioned the storybook walls. Well, they move around smoothly to create different spaces for various scenes. They have many doors in them through which set elements will appear and disappear like magic. Now, I've been watching the HD screen, and there are a lot of kids in the audience, and you're going to hear a lot of laughter from the audience during this show. The humor in this staging feels very French. It's childlike, yet sophisticated, very sophisticated. A lot of things are exaggerated in a stylized way, the movements, the costumes.
And they are executed with great precision. The performers have all really taken to this style, while at the same time, each individual performance has a personality of its own.
Yeah, Stephanie Blythe as Madame de la Altière looks rather glamorous, but in an absolutely absurd way. A tulip-shaped gown, frizzy black hair with sharp poofs on each side, bright red lips. Cendrillon is dressed simply, as you might imagine, in gray with a gray cardigan and apron. When she appears in her ball gown, it's also in shades of gray, dark charcoal at the hem, fading upwards to almost white at the top.
Yeah, Pelli wanted to evoke the cinders from which she came while still being elegant and beautiful.
Yeah, it's shimmery with a strapless top and big floaty skirt. Mm. We will hear, in order of vocal appearance, Laurent Nauri as Pandolfo, Stephanie Blythe as Madame de la Altière, and Ying Fong and Maya Layani as her two daughters, Noémie and Dorothée. Joyce DiDonato is Lucette, known as Cendrillon, and Kathleen Kim is the fairy godmother. The six spirits are Leanne Coble-Dispensa, Sarah Heaton, Anne Nonemacher, Elizabeth Brooks, Christina Thompson-Anderson, and Rosalie Sullivan. Our concertmaster this afternoon is David Chan, and our conductor is Bertrand de Billy. Well, the fairy godmother, I love her. She has a little bit of attitude, spiky silver hair, and a silvery gown with a feathery ruff. And there's a beautiful effect when she's working her magic while Cendrillon sleeps. The walls have gone dark, except for the dots on the lowercase letter I's in the text, which will glow and look like stars.
I love that she has kind of a punk persona and a magic wand at the same time.
Exactly. It's like Tinkerbell all grown up with attitude. Yeah, very fun. And here comes Maestro de Billy onto the podium. Asking the orchestra to rise and shaking hands with David Chan, let's hear Act One of Massenet's Cendrillon.
Ce n'est que moi. Pourquoi vous taisez-vous? Pas besoin de prudence. Ne soyez pas ainsi troublé par ma présence. Et dites, que se passe-t-il? Qu'est-ce à dire? Au fond, ils ont raison. Allez, 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 on vous réclame.
C'est gentil.
Savoir obtenir de ma femme un peu d'obéissance. Hélas, vouloir n'est pas pouvoir. bois, grand Dieu, veuf et tranquille. Vivant chez moi, loin de la ville, exempt de soucis, dis-moi, près de ma fille est adorable. Et je quitte ma ferme et mon grand bois. Pourquoi? 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 Pour m'en aller, tenter le diable en étant le mari très mari d'une comtesse fière et du marais redoutable qui m'apportait ton hôte. Oh, c'est épouvantable, de belles filles deux. Hélas, mon sort est lamentable. Allez, chérie, je suis condamné par la loi, condamné par la loi. Plaignez-moi, ombre de Philémon. Encore, si j'étais seul à gémir, mais non, pour toi c'est l'abandon, ma fillette. Ah, que je souffre en te voyant, Lucette, sans appliquer ni collerette. Tu caches sans un regard pour m'accuser quand au logis se l'est. Je te laisse pendant le pas. En te voyant ainsi, ah, que je souffre, oh, que je souffre. Que veux-tu? Je sais que c'est mal. Mais si ma femme prend des rages, je tremble et je ne peux résister à l'orage. Ce sera peut-être pénible, il faudra bien qu'un jour enfin chez moi, il faudra bien que je finisse par être maître. Un jour, enfin, chez moi, je finirai par être maître. Un jour, enfin, chez moi, enfin, je finirai par être maître. Enfin, je serai maître, enfin, je serai maître, maître, maître. Ma femme, hélas, pardon, vouloir n'est pas pouvoir.
Par ces convaincus soins vous présentez. Oh,
félicitez-moi donc de mon exactitude.
Vous êtes toujours en retard.
En retard.
En retard. Enfin, cette fois, par hasard.
Ne soyez pas troublés, vous allez me lever. En voyant votre entrée.
Excusez-moi, j'admire. Ne disons rien, restons tranquilles en notre coin. Ne voulons de près de loin, ajoutez-moi une parole, un doux espoir, nous soutenant, nous caressant, nous consolant. On va l'enfermer, elle est folle.
Eh bien, qu'avez-vous donc ? On est ici, mon Dieu, et on est là, on est là.
Thank you. Thank you. Oh, Pas au bal, à la cour, à gagner. Oh, suis-je folle? Est-ce de l'or qui brille? À la place de boyau, cette robe splendide. Je ne suis plus cendrillon. Je suis princesse, je suis reine, je suis reine, 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 reine. Oh,
Cendrillon is off to the ball thanks to the help from the fairy godmother. That was Act One of Massenet's Cendrillon, live from the Metropolitan Opera, starring Joyce DiDonato, Stephanie Blythe, Laurent Nowry, and Kathleen Kim. Act Two is going to begin in just a few minutes. It takes place in the palace of Prince Charming. Courtiers and officials fuss over him, but in his aria, he sings about the emptiness of his life, his dreams of finding true love.
Into my ears, he shares a musical language with Cendrillon, not only in their vocal range, but in the soulful orchestration.
His father, the king, tells him he must choose a wife at the ball. And when the ball begins, a parade of princesses present themselves.
Now, this is an extended ballet sequence with music looking back a couple of centuries to French Baroque dance.
And we'll hear the audience laugh. The princess's costumes and efforts to attract the prince are really over the top. But things come to a halt with the entrance of Cendrillon. Everyone is charmed by this mysterious beauty, except Madame de la Haltière and her daughters. Cendrillon and the prince are instantly mesmerized by each other, and they have an exquisite duet. The prince asks her name, but she replies she must remain unknown.
Massenet scores this passage so delicately, suggesting the magical element in Cendrillon's appearance at the ball.
The prince declares passionately that he would rather die than lose her.
And Cendrillon delivers a line that will become a sort of leitmotif for them. Vous êtes mon prince charmant. You are my prince charming. She's echoed by solo oboe, and it makes a mystical effect. The two voices join ecstatically.
But then the clock strikes midnight, and Cendrillon is forced to break away and flee, leaving the prince reeling. In order of vocal appearance, we will hear David Lee as the Master of Ceremonies and Peter Nekoronitz as the Dean of the Faculty, both of them making network broadcast debuts. Jung Chol Cha is the Prime Minister, Alice Coote is Prince Charming, and Bradley Garvin is the King. Laurent Nauri is Pandolf, Stephanie Blythe is Madame de la Altière, and Ying Fang and Maya Liani are the two daughters, Noemi and Dorothée. Joyce DiDonato is Cendrillon. Bertrand de Billy is conducting. Now, when this act opens, Prince Charming is in his pajamas, hiding in his armoire, but his valets will help him change into white tie and tails with a red sash for the ball.
Red is the dominant color at the ball, an homage to the red storybook of Pelle's grandmother.
Yes, all the women are in red gowns, including Madame and her two daughters. Pelle has used the term fashion victim, which is perfect to describe some of the costumes in this show. The princess's outfits are outrageously stylized. One looks like a bird. In fact, they call it the bird costume. Another has one of those medieval headdresses with two cones sticking out. It's
and
hilarious.
The way they're choreographed, each has a different but equally ridiculous way of approaching the prince, then reacting when she's rejected.
I know. It's like downtrodden, sad. Some of them are a little incensed. Some of them don't even like make it over there full of the way. So let's go back. It's time for the fun ball scene from Massenet's Cendrillon.
Écoutez.
Non.
Il n'écoute rien.
comme obéir. Vous allez voir à cette fête les filles de noblesse. Or, vous devrez choisir celle qui vous fera le mieux tourner la tête. Elle épousait, elle épousait mon fils, quel est mon beau plaisir.
pas à présent. Oh, Dieu, la mort se perd pas sans ce jour, le temps de notre c'est l'instant. Jamais,
c'est l'instant, jamais.
Que je suis donc ému, Sa Majesté m'a reconnu. Mon auguste maître va me parler, peut-être. Charmante créature.
Take it!
Oh no, the clock struck midnight and Cinderella had to run away. And the prince is like, what's going on? We heard the first two acts of Cendrillon live from the Metropolitan Opera, our network broadcast premiere of Massenet's Cinderella Opera, starring Joyce DiDonato, Alice Coote, Stephanie Blythe, Laurent Nauri, and Kathleen Kim, conducted by Bertrand de Billy. And we're going to go backstage in just a second with HD host Eileen Perez, who's going to speak with our Cinderella, Joyce DiDonato. And then after that, she's going to speak with Alice Coote, our Prince Charming. Oh, and now we have the red carpet from the stage presentation. And here comes Joyce DiDonato walking downstage and waving at the audience in the movie theaters and grabbing a microphone.
Oh, Joyce. Joyce, brava. Hermosa, you look, what a fabulous first act. I have chills. This is an opera that you've long championed. Why does this work speak to you so strongly?
Well, I've lived with Cinderella now for starting back at Marilla in 1996. So it's a lot of decades actually now. And you know, there is something that keeps pulling me back about her innocence and the message that love wins. And I know that sounds so naive to say in today's world, but this idea that we can come back to, that's why fairy tales are so timeless and we keep returning to them, right? And we share them with our children and all of that. Yes. We keep coming back to good winning over evil, love conquering the darkness. And it's something I just can't stay away from. And that's I'm so beautiful. Grateful to have the chance to be on stage and sing about that.
This is an absolutely delightful production directed by Laurent Pellier, which you've appeared in all over the world. Does performing in it feel like second nature to you now?
Well, this is a production quite like some of Jean-Pierre Ponel's productions, where what has been crafted is almost inseparable from the music. You're not aware of the staging, you're not aware of the music. It feels as if this is the way it's always been. So there is that element of I'm coming home to it, which is wonderful. But the genius of Laurent, bonsoir Laurent, en Paris, je crois, is that he somehow keeps it fresh. To my eyes, this looks traditional and modern at the same time, and it feels fresh because the emotions are pure, and of course we have an astonishing cast today that we all play with each other, and it feels really as if it's the first time each time we do it. Well, I will miss it terribly.
Oh, well, you're in the unique position that you've sung the role of Cinderella in two different operas on the stage of the Met, Rossini's Cenerentola and now Massenet's Cendrillon. How would you compare those two experiences?
They come from different periods and different frames of mind. I think with Rossini, it was quite the perspective of philosopher. So the magician is a philosopher, Alidoro. And a lot of the emphasis on that is more the moral of it. Here, we get the romance. And we get it in a French style, which is quirky and very funny, but also light and romantic.
Speaking of romantic, tell me, what is it like to sing a love duet with another mezzo? In this case, Prince Charming, Alice Coote.
It's the most delightful thing in the world. She's an artist that inspires me profoundly because she comes on stage, she gives everything that she is, an extraordinary musicianship, extraordinary language, extraordinary commitment to the character. And we get to soar and fly together. Mm. And I think what's so special about those two voices together is you lose track of who is who, which is gorgeous. The sensuality of
it. Well, Joyce, you're giving us an extraordinary evening. Choi, choi, choi. Thank you for speaking with me. And we
love
you.
Te quiero mucho.
Te adoro mucho.
Hola, el mundo. Thank you so much. Carry on the fairy tale. I hope it turns out well.
Thank you. We're cheering for you. Our Prince Charming, Alice Coote, is joining me now. Hello, Alice.
Hello, Eileen. Lovely to see you.
Oh, you're a Prince Charming indeed. Like Cenerentola. I mean, Cinderella. Oh, Cendrillon. Prince
it's
Charming.
Same story. It's the famous story.
This archetype of fairy tales. How do you see the Massenet version of the character, and how do you make him human and real?
That's a very good question. He is just a real human being. He's not a prince. He's not a caricature. He's not the Disney story. I don't think anyone wants to see that. I think they just want to feel that you truly believe that you are the person, which I do. And he's just a sad guy who needs to meet the love of his life, and he's totally encased in this politics, this, you know, the world, his job, and he's alone. He's just lonely, as is Cinderella. It's quite interesting to see how alone she is and how alone I am, and I truly believe it. I'm in love now.
I'm in love with you already. You're no stranger to iconic trouser roles. This is your sixth one at the Met.
Is it really?
After such roles as Octavian, Alcesto, Hansel. Where does the role of Prince Charming fit in this pantheon of masculinity?
Well, everyone is completely different. It's like saying, you know, compare different women, compare different men. Every single man is different, and actually you could play the role differently every night, which in a way I suppose I tried to do. But essentially, he is who he is because the story tells us and the music tells us who he is. But, you know, he's an aristocrat and he's young, but who really cares about that? It's the humanity that I go for. Mm. And what he says when he speaks from the heart in the duets and in the arias, when you can really see what his soul is, that's what I'm interested in.
That's everything. I understand that you recently shared some of these insights of the piece with students as part of the Met's education program. What did you tell them and how did they respond?
Oh my God, that was incredible. The Met is unbelievable, as we know, as an arts institution. But the work they do in education, I had the privilege of speaking just to children in four states this week in the USA. Wow. But of course, I know that there's students of music who may want to become something involved with music or not, all the way around the world watching right now. And I just wanted to shout out to all those students that actually spoke to me, and I sang them a little bit of that first duet online.
Wow.
Today, and not today, last week. And it was really special because they asked me, how does it feel to sing? And I said, it feels incredible. Just listen to the orchestra. Just listen when I start singing. That's how it feels. And, you know, I'm just so happy that I got to speak with them.
Oh, Alice, thank you so much for joining me today and for this gorgeous portrayal.
Thank you very much.
Thank you. Toi, toi, toi.
That was our HD host, Eileen Perez, speaking with mezzo-soprano Alice Coote, who's singing the role of Prince Charming. And before that, she was with mezzo-soprano Joyce DiDonato, who's singing the title role in this performance of Cendrillon.
You know, it's inevitable is the word that they were using in terms of the staging seeming to make the music happen. And that's one of the wonderful things about this production, the comedy, the touching parts, their portrayals, the music, Le Rond Palais, it really comes together as a unit.
We were saying when we were listening, Ira, it just all seems like it's all happening for the first time. It's
mm-hmm.
all, it feels very spontaneous, mm-hmm. doesn't it? I'm Mary Jo Heath with commentator Ira Siff. Later in this intermission, Eileen Perez will speak with Maestro Bertrand de Billy and two of our other stars, Kathleen Kim and Laurent Nalry. But before that, I'm going to have a chat right here in the radio booth pretty soon with the Met's wonderful chorus master, Donald Palumbo. And after intermission, of course, the second half of Massenet's Cendrillon. Don't go away.
Well, we will leave New York there for a minute or so while they have an ad break, which gives us time to have one of our own.
Live music on In Tune. Members of the Chamber Music Society of Lincoln Center in the In Tune studio. Exclusive live performances by top musicians every day on In Tune. Weekdays at 5 on BBC Radio 3.
This is Opera on 3. As there's just the one interval tonight, there's no Met quiz, but lots of interval features and interviews to enjoy. And we'll rejoin the Met for those shortly. And following that, Act 3 of Cendrillon is due to start just before 8:30, so a little under half an hour. We're nearing the end of the Met season now. The final opera, Romeo et Juliet, is next week, and then it's back to operas from around Britain in Opera on 3. Some highlights coming up include Shostakovich's Lady Macbeth of Mtsensk from the Royal Opera House, starring soprano Ava Maria Westbrook and tenor Brandon Jovanovic. You can hear that on the 19th of May. Also coming up at the Opera House, a new opera by George Benjamin called Lessons in Love and Violence, conducted by Benjamin himself, and the cast including Stefan de Guin, Barbara Hannigan, and you can hear it here on Radio 3 on the 2nd of June. But now the ads are over and it's time to rejoin the Met to find out more about tonight's opera.
Cendrillon premiered with the Opéra Comique in Paris on May the 24th, 1899. Here are some other things that were happening in Paris at that time. The Comique company had recently moved out of the Théâtre Lyrique, which was now under new management by the great actress Sarah Bernhardt. She promptly renamed the theater after herself. Her performances so far included Sardou's La Tosca and even the title role in an adaptation of Hamlet. French politics were dominated by l'affaire Dreyfus, the Dreyfus Affair, the case of a Jewish army officer who'd been wrongfully imprisoned for espionage. The scandal escalated in the wake of Émile Zola's eloquent open letter, J'accuse. Accused of anti-Semitism and a gross miscarriage of justice, the government was finally considering a retrial. Over in a humble shed near the Sorbonne School of Physics and Chemistry, Marie and Pierre Curie were hard at work. Marie had coined the term radioactivity to describe the radiation emitted by certain elements. Following up on their recent discovery of polonium and radium, they were now trying to isolate these radioactive elements in a pure form. And construction was underway for the city's first urban rail network, Le Métro. It was to be introduced to the public at a World's Fair the following year. The subway stations would boast beautiful entrances designed by architect Hector Guimot in a style of the day known as Art Nouveau. These are just some of the things that were happening in Paris when Massenet's Cendrillon had its world premiere in 1899. We are live at the Metropolitan Opera, and we're listening to Cendrillon by Jules Massenet with a libretto by Henri Quint based on the fairy tale by Charles Perrault. This new production of Cendrillon is by Laurent Pelly, who also designed the costumes. The sets are by Barbara de Lamberg, who is making her Met debut with this production. The lighting is by Duane Schuller, and the choreography is by Laura Scozzi. Cendrillon is produced in association with the Royal Opera House Covent Garden, London, Grand Théâtre de Liceu in Barcelona, Théâtre Royal de la Monnaie, Brussels, and the Opéra de Lille. The production was first performed at the Santa Fe Opera. The production is a gift of the Sybil B. Harrington Endowment Fund, with additional funding from Elizabeth M. and Jean-Marie R. Evillard. The chorus master is Donald Palumbo. The musical preparation is by Howard Watkins, Joel Revson, Jonathan C. Kelly, and Dimitri Dover. The assistant stage directors are Peter McClintock, Christian Rett, and Jay Knighton-Schmidt. The stage band conductor is Gregory Buchalter, and the prompter is Jonathan Kelly, and the French diction coach is Denise Massé. The stage manager is Jonathan Waterfield. Well, there are just 2 weeks left in the Met season. We're all huffing and puffing, but it's still full speed ahead for the acclaimed Metropolitan Opera Chorus. They're on stage in every performance until the final curtain. And I don't know where he's found time, but Chorus Master Donald Palumbo is here with us today. He's been in the wings for this one. Donald, thanks for coming up during
intermission. It's always a pleasure. Thank you.
So you guys are in all four operas, as I mentioned, Cendrillon, yes. Tosca, Lucia, and Romeo and Juliet.
Yes.
How do you keep everybody energized and focused all the way to the very end on May the 12th?
Well, it's been very interesting because last week we actually opened Romeo, which is quite a late opening in the season. We had a cast change for Tosca recently, of course, so that revived all of our energy and the whole opera was quite different conductor, and of course with Anya Netrebko singing Tosca for the first time. And then Lucia had a cast change as well and came back with a new Lucia, a new tenor, a new baritone. So it sort of kept everything fresh for us in these last 3 weeks of the season.
That hadn't occurred to me that if there's a total cast change, it seems like kind of a brand new opera to you guys.
Well, exactly. We walk, especially if there's a conductor change for the chorus, because often we will not get a rehearsal. Now, with the Tosca and the Lucia, we did get a rehearsal with the conductor. But, for example, this season when Turandot came back, Marco Armiliato conducted the revival, and we came into that first performance with the cast change and the conductor change, not having seen or heard the soloists, and, of course, a brand-new conductor for the entire chorus. It keeps us on our toes. It's really fun.
That's when you
fun.
Have to rely on the fabulous experience and the talent of everybody around,
exactly.
Don't you?
I'm always amazed at how they handle all the curves that we get thrown at us on a nightly basis, almost. Opera is one of these art forms that you never quite know what you're going to get on any given evening. And this chorus is so amazing in their flexibility.
That's what makes live performance so exciting.
Exactly.
So are you guys seeing the light at the end of the tunnel?
Oh, we definitely are.
Yeah.
We're going to be starting to prepare Marnie, believe it or not, next week.
Uh-huh.
Just to get
for next season.
For next season. But we're definitely looking. This has been a difficult season for us with a number of, you know, difficult performances. The Parsifal sequence takes a lot of energy, a mm-hmm. lot of choristers. Of course, the Verdi Requiem this season was an
truly
intensive, wonderful experience. Yeah. So we're all looking forward to the break.
Well, I want to talk to you a little bit about Cendrillon because it really showcases the chorus in so many different ways. So describe for our listeners everything else that they're doing in this production.
Well, what's interesting about Cendrillon is the actual amount of music for the full soprano, alto, tenor, bass chorus, so to speak, which in this production we use 40 singers, is actually quite minimal. It's all the other little small parts and groups that are just so difficult. When the opera begins, there are 8 choristers on stage as servants. It's mm-hmm. 2 sopranos, 2 altos, 2 tenors, 2 basses. And they basically open the opera. If you could see the production, you could see how much running they have to do to get from one side of the stage to the other and yet sing this quite delicate, tricky music. After that scene, we have the scene with Cendrillon and the fairy godmother and 6 chorus spirits. So these are 6 choristers who are basically soloists in this scene, augmented by only 4 dancers. And when you watch the scene, you think, oh my goodness, this is an entire ballet, a corps de ballet up there running around. But it's not. It's only 4 dancers augmenting our choristers.
It was very impressive. Did you guys have dance auditions
for
the ones
that sang? We didn't
have
dance auditions, but boy, if we do any more productions like this, I think it is going to have to be part of our audition because the physical demands of this opera are, I think, greater than the musical demands. It's mm-hmm. very tricky. The choreography is wonderful, but it takes a lot of work and a lot of rehearsal and a lot of split-second timing for it to look exactly right.
So they, it looks like they're really having a ball.
They love doing this.
So in
this
our last opera. 30 seconds, yes. What are you looking forward to next season? You've already mentioned Marnie.
We have some great pieces in the fall. Samson and Delilah,
oh, yeah.
Fanciulla, Mephistopheles, all in the first opening months of the season. So we have our work cut out for us when we start up in the fall.
Well, toy, toy, toy to you and the chorus. Enjoy the rest of the season and try to get a little rest over the summer.
Thank you
very
much. So
we're ready to go again. I've been speaking with Donald Palumbo, the chorus master of the Metropolitan Opera.
Once again, we'll leave New York there for a moment for their ad break, which just gives me time to tell you about another opera coming up on BBC Radio 3. As well as the regular Saturday evening slots, you can also hear wonderful opera from around the globe in afternoon concerts, Thursday Opera Matinee. This coming week, there's a rare chance to hear more than just the overture of Weber's opera Oberon with a lively new production from Bavarian State Opera conducted by Ivor Bolton. Weber died young before he could replace the spoken dialogue with music, which is probably why the opera is so rarely performed. But the music he did write is fabulous. This production stars Julian Prégardien as Oberon and Alonia Abramova as his Titania. It's next Thursday at 2:00. As always, the opera pages of the Radio 3 website are the place to go for details of all upcoming broadcasts, including cast lists and production photos. But now it's time to head back to New York for a sneak preview of next week's Met Opera broadcast.
Soprano Eileen Perez, who's hosting the Met's live in HD transmission today, will be starring in the matinee performance next Saturday, our final live radio broadcast of the season. It's Romeo and Juliet, Gounod's lush setting of Shakespeare's famous love story. Perez spoke with us recently about the way Juliet and her music develop over the course of the opera. She begins as a carefree young girl at a ball.
Viscerally, acoustically, and sonically, to me, Juliet is a flame of passion and fire and impulsiveness. She has this waltz where she says, "Why suffer heartbreak when there's life to live?" I think there's a premonition. There's a section where she says, "Let me sleep in the slumber away from the morose winter that heartbreak can give us." If you listen to it musically, you think, uh-oh, this means something. She feels something's up, but not quite sure what it is. And to see Gounod create that, you know, not to feel it is extraordinary. When those moments happen, it's as if everything on set goes away. There's always that focal spotlight that's way up. I always have a sense of dissolving into that.
Juliet's other aria, often called the poison aria, comes later in the opera. In order to be with Romeo, she must take a potion that will cast her into a death-like sleep. But first, she has to overcome her terror.
I love the line. She says, "Que l'aube de bonheur," that the light of dawn will be the hope to get over all of the torture and the pain and the guilt and the wrong of all things in the past. Then we get back to the head of the aria, Amour, Ranimo, Mon Courage, and it's just a whole new beast. She just goes for it. The doubts are gone. She's totally counting on love. She's a hero at that moment. She's just such a gift for women, for young girls, in terms of a character who can show her youth, her vulnerability, determination, her courage. Oh, it's a stunning night to portray her, and I feel so lucky.
Soprano Eileen Perez, who's starring in Gounod's Romeo et Juliet, opposite tenor Charles Castronovo, conducted by Placido Domingo. Next Saturday's matinee broadcast, live from the Met. I'm Mary Jo Heath with commentator Ira Siff, and we are eager to hear the final two acts of Massenet's fairy tale Cendrillon. Ira, let's talk through what happens. It will diverge a bit from the familiar Cinderella story. Act three opens with Cendrillon returning home from the ball. She has an aria describing how she fled and lost her glass slipper in her haste.
Massenet marked the tempo for the beginning of this aria, lively and agitated. There's a string figure that suggests frantic running as Cendrillon describes the sights and the sounds of her path home. And listen for the bell-like staccato passage that represents her passing the belfry.
But then she becomes deflated as she realizes her adventure is over.
Yes, and she reverts to the sad melody from Act One as she says to herself, "Resign yourself, little cricket."
When the others come home, Madame de la Altière is in a foul mood. Pandolf dares to suggest that the mystery lady at the ball seemed charming. And Madame just puts him in his place, and this is a spectacular showpiece aria
yes,
for her.
The orchestra has an almost indescribable bombast as she catalogs the distinguished members of her family tree.
And she tells Cendrillon how this hussy was chased away from the ball. She claims that even the prince wasn't taken in by her. Well, Cendrillon is distressed to hear this, and Pandolf finally puts his foot down and throws the others out of the room.
He and his daughter then share a tender duet, and it's laced with pastoral woodwind figures as Pandolf promises her they'll return to the countryside.
But once Cendrillon is alone again, she resolves not to weigh her father down with her sadness. In fact, she no longer wants to live.
Cendrillon has an aria of great loss and nostalgia as she bids farewell to her few beloved objects, including the armchair where her mother used to rock her to sleep. She quotes the lullaby before crying out, "Mama."
She decides to go to the forest to die. And in this production, the next scene takes place on a chimney rooftop. It's a breathtakingly beautiful scene.
Well, it begins with the fairy godmother summoning the spirits in a flurry of elaborate coloratura. We hear their distant voices against ethereal orchestration.
Both Cendrillon and the prince have made their way to this place, but the fairy godmother orders the spirits to make the lovers invisible to one another. They each kneel and pray to the fairy godmother for help.
They sing this melody in unison, but then the prince has a solo, and it's full of despair at having lost the woman he fell in love with.
Cendrillon, who can hear him but not see him, and doesn't realize who he is, feels sorry for this poor soul and offers to sacrifice herself to save him. But then she recognizes his voice. She finally tells him her name, Lucette, and declares her love.
In intense ascending phrases, the prince and Cendrillon plead with the fairy godmother to be able to see one another.
Moved by their love, the fairy godmother grants their wish, and the lovers embrace and swear to be true to one another.
You know, it feels like a mystical ceremony with the soft chorus of spirits in the background.
And the lovers fall into an enchanted sleep as the act ends. There will be a very brief pause after this, and then the fourth and final act takes place back at the house. We learn that months ago, Pandolf found Cendrillon outside, frozen and unconscious, and he's been caring for her.
Pandolf explains all of this in a spoken passage over gentle orchestral accompaniment.
He tells Cendrillon she was talking in her sleep about a ball, a prince, a slipper, and she begins to believe that it was all just a dream. Their duet is interrupted by the voices of young women celebrating the arrival of spring. And then, Madame and her daughters enter with exciting news. The king has summoned maidens from all over in the hope that one of them is the unknown beauty the prince met at the ball. Madame has an aria. It declares the impending arrival of princesses from all over the world.
The aria has a march-like insistence culminating in her description of her fantasy scenario. After all those other women, suddenly these radiant ladies appear, and the crowd murmurs that they must have been sent from heaven. And who are they? Well, of course, it is she and her two daughters.
When the king's herald announces that each woman must try on the glass slipper left behind by the lady who fled, Cendrillon realizes it wasn't a dream after all, and she calls out to the fairy godmother for her help. The final scene takes place back at the palace, where the princesses parade in to try on the slipper. It's another very funny dance sequence.
And they're accompanied by a sprightly orchestral passage. It's laced with gongs, fifes, castanets, suggesting their international origins. But none of them is the prince's beloved. And he pours out his despair in a melody reminiscent of his first sad aria.
Suddenly, we hear the voice of the fairy godmother urging him to open his eyes. And Cendrillon appears.
The prince recognizes her immediately, and she sings that lovely You Are My Prince charming motif.
And of course, the glass slipper fits. Mm-hmm. Everyone hails Cendrillon as their future queen, and Madame de la Haltière now rushes forward exclaiming, My daughter Lucette, whom I adore! And Cendrillon is just too generous to contradict her.
And Massenet puts a button, kind of, on the opera with a brief chorale for the full company. They sing, the play is over. We've done our best to fly her through fairyland.
Great way to end. Now, in just a short while, we're going to go backstage again to join HD host Eileen Perez with our maestro, Bertrand de Billy. And he's also going to speak with Kathleen Kim and Laurent Nauri, our fairy godmother, and Pandolf. Now, Ira, as you were mentioning, there's something very special about this opera that we both adore, and it's very tricky to write something that's both homage and parody. Tell me what you were saying.
Well, the parody has to come up to the level of the music that it's paying homage to, and he does it so brilliantly in this opera.
And that's why it all feels so spontaneous to us. I think we're getting ready. We're going to go backstage to Eileen Perez and her guests just now.
Now, I'm with our conductor, Bertrand de Billy. Hello, maestro.
Hi, hello.
Oh, maestro, Cendrillon premiered in 1899, but it's only now finally appearing at the Met. Why do you think Cendrillon is not performed more often?
I don't know. Maybe because of the other piece from Rossini, Cenerentola, or maybe because it's not a normal story between a tenor and a soprano.
You know? What first drew...
It's two sopranos, you know?
Could be. What first drew you to the score of Cendrillon?
It's a lot of contrasts. It's really a piece with emotion, joy, operette, lightness, deepness, and with a lot of moving moments, but every time short. You never have time to swim in an atmosphere. You are deep with the father, and then before you start to cry, you go to the family, and then it's funny, but not too much. It's like fantastic balance. You know, and that is a French style, I think.
Well, we're feeling it. And how does Cendrillon compare to some of Massenet's more famous work like Werther and Manon?
Yeah, but Werther and Manon was before. And it means it's very interesting to know that this composer wrote a funny piece after the serious piece. It means it's more difficult to be funny than to be serious. And you feel in Cendrillon some moments from Werther, from Manon, even from Strauss, from Wagner, like a parody, and then some lightness. It was exactly what Verdi did with Falstaff. At the end of his life, he did something funny. But it's difficult. That was, it's fantastic. You need maturity to do that.
Well, and this, what is it like to rehearse a score like this that's new to the Met Orchestra and chorus?
That was a gift. Because when you come in a new piece, you don't have tradition. Tradition is sometimes good, not always. And it was very funny to see the eyes of all these musicians, something new finally. It's not every day that they do that. And it was discovering together, work in process, and every show is something new. And I hope it would stay in this repertoire because it's a gift, this piece.
I'm sure it will. You have such a remarkable cast today, led by Joyce DiDonato and Alice Coote, both of whom you worked with before on this piece. Tell us about what they bring to Cendrillon.
We did the piece together in London 7 years ago, and they have the naivety, they have the voice, the beauty, and they have a good connection. We are like a small family now. I would say with Joyce, with Alice, with Laurent Pelly, mm-hmm. and with me, we did that together. It's family finding a new way again 7 years after that. And more maturity, and it's maybe the next time it will be 5 years, I don't know, but it's something creating, and they both bring life and honesty in this piece.
Well, thank you for bringing this piece to life, and thank you for speaking with me, Maestro.
You're welcome.
Toi, toi, toi for the rest of the opera.
Yes, thank you.
Now I'm going to speak with Cendrillon's two protectors, her father, Pandolf, sung by bass baritone Laurent Nauri, and her fairy godmother, coloratura soprano Kathleen Kim. Hello!
Hello.
Oh my gosh. I just lost.
We're dashing.
Took my breath, yes. Took my breath away. Laurent, let's start with you. Pandolf is clearly stuck in a difficult situation between his daughter and his wife. How do you play both a henpecked husband, devoted father at the same time?
There's not much consistency with him, is it? sometimes he's very caring for his daughter, but his ambition drives him to marry this wonderful, powerful woman. Mm-hmm. It's like when one is here, he's on her side, and when the other one is there, he's torn between, he doesn't know which side to choose because he's not very courageous anyway. Oh. So you will see that there's a moment in the second part where finally he gathered some kind of courage. You will see. I mean, I'm very proud of him in the second half, but not that he's really a big hero. I mean, he's a sort of a wimp with heroic, wills and
tenderness.
Tenderness, but like a tender wimp still.
Well, Kathleen, the fairy godmother, you have to sing way up in the stratosphere, and at the same time, you have a lot of elaborate stage choreography to manage. How do you do it?
Well, you know, I did more difficult staging than this before. This is my third production with Laurent Pelly. Uh-huh. And last two times I was on high flying chair singing coloratura aria, and I had to sing while I was skating. So compared to that, this is nothing. I'm just loving it, yeah. And somehow the staging helps me to sing better, I think.
Yeah. Oh, well, thank you both. What is the trick to making a fairy tale characters believable on stage?
Don't ask yourself the question. Just live what you have to live at the moment you have to live it. After that, just try to think that you've done your very best. That's all.
Mm-hmm. I mean, Laurent Pelly's direction is always based on music and words. So, you know, I'm easily convinced on stage. So that, I think that's the trick. I have to be convinced that it's a fairy. Mm-hmm. Godmother, mm-hmm. then I think it can be delivered.
Yeah. You are. You're doing this. And Laurent, you're singing the role of another father right now.
Yeah.
Capulet.
Yeah, actually, your father
My
at the
father,
moment.
Romeo
yes.
and Juliet. Are you drawn to fatherly roles?
Well, I guess age calls for it, I suppose. any dad job, I'm available. Basically. I mean, baddies and dads, that's what I'm doing most.
Okay. Yeah. Well, Kathleen, what are some of your favorite roles?
I love all the roles I'm singing, but if I have to choose,
yes.
then Servinetta, Gilda, Lucia, and La Fée.
Well, thank you both. Laurent, Kathleen, we wish you all the best as you continue on to the second act, and I can't wait to see what's next.
That was our HD host Eileen Perez talking with Kathleen Kim and Laurent Nalry, and before that with our maestro Bertrand de Billy. In these last two acts, we're going to hear in order of vocal appearance Joyce DiDonato as Cendrillon, Ying Fang and Maya Liani as her stepsisters Noémie and Dorothée, Laurent Nalry as Pandolf, and Stephanie Blythe as Madame de la Altière. Kathleen Kim is the fairy godmother, and the six spirits are Leanne Coble Dispenza, Sarah Heaton, Anne Nonemacher, Elizabeth Brooks, Christina Thompson Anderson, and Rosalie Sullivan. Alice Coote is Prince Charming. The voices of the handmaidens are some of the same ladies we just heard, and the herald is Johan Bellum, and our king is Bradley Garvin. Here is Maestro Bertrand de Billy. Let's hear Act 3 of Massenet's Cendrillon.
Keep it high! dire. Vous avez le front de nier que cette fille, cette grille, cette gueule, cette chiffon, que vous direz-je encore? Rien, rien, un anneau, et moins que rien, et moins que rien.
J'aimerais mieux l'obscurité si j'avais la tranquillité.
Il est donc arrivé quelque chose, mon père.
Non, rien vraiment que de fort ordinaire.
Oh, votre calme m'exaspère. Que faut-il, comment s'y vous voir? Que faut-il voir, je dois savoir. Il n'a pas connu au bas de la cour est venue. Il s'est fait rien du tout, mais c'est sans aucun doute. Il s'était rien de tout dans ses fronteries. Laissez-nous dire, je vous prie. Aux abonnés, aux festins, aux chacun, aux fesses et des poils. D'épouvanté d'horreur, d'épouvanté d'horreur, d'épouvanté d'horreur. Et d'horreur, c'est fut ton désarroi. Sur la mort, indignation. Cette impudence, mais au bout d'un instant,
on a mis le temps,
mais la crue s'est bien vite de prendre la fuite, chassé au milieu du vol par notre mépris général.
Ah, vous exagérez.
ne peux pas placer des mots.
Si vous criez toutes ensemble, je m'en vais, je m'en vais.
Racontez-moi qu'a dit alors le fils du roi, que l'on ne pouvait s'y méprendre, que ses yeux, à moment, abusés, voyaient que les pécans d'ailleurs étaient sans elle. C'est inconnu, j'ai dit, droit laissé pour la
Mais ma fille pâlit, qu'as-tu, ma pauvre enfant, assez de mon caquet.
Qu'un homme est énervant.
Mon Dieu, la force l'abandonne. Mon enfant, sortez. Je vous l'entends. Sortez. Vous pouvez trépigner. Je vous jette à la porte.
Rétracté, insolent.
Le diable vous emporte. Sacrifié en venant à la cour, mais tu pardonneras qu'on nourrirons un jour de mon ambition audite. Nous irons comme deux amoureux cueillir le blanc muguet.
Lilis et Robin, tous les deux, et que des planches argentines s'éveilleront.
Chère Mathilde,
Mathilde. Oh, Thank you.
The fairy godmother has reunited Cendrillon and Prince Charming, who were both ready to give up their lives for their love. But was it all a dream? That was Act 3 of Massenet's Cendrillon live from the Metropolitan Opera. I made it through most of the cast list for Act 4 earlier, except for the voices of the three maidens. They are Leanne Coble-Dispenza, Marite Hapuku, and Rosalie Sullivan. And Act 4, the conclusion, is going to begin very soon. Act 3 was like a beautiful interlude that took us out of the Cinderella story as we know it, but now we're about to re-enter the more familiar version of events. We're going to have another parade of princesses, this time all of them vying and hoping that that glass slipper is going to fit them. And one by one, we will see their hopes dashed until, as usual, the right girl comes along, and that is our Cinderella once again. But Madame de la Altière and her the two sisters will have their moment too, and of course the glass slipper is not going to fit them either.
I love that she kind of embraces Cendrillon as her beloved daughter after it works out way it works out.
Whom she has loved always along, as she announces. So let's go back and hear the conclusion of Massenet's Cendrillon.
Oh, pauvre enfant! Depuis qu'on t'a ramené des bords du ruisselet où nous t'avons trouvé, gisant près des roseaux, glacé, inanimé, voilà des jours, et moi. Quel souvenir affreux! Quelle angoisse cruelle! En te prenant, la mort nous aurait pris tous deux. Mais la mort n'osa pas, en te voyant si belle.
J'étais donc insensé.
À quoi vas-tu songer?
Alors, père, c'était comme si ma pensée m'avait tout à coup délaissé.
Tu riais,
tu pleurais sans motif et sans trêve. Tu vivais comme dans un rêve. Comme au hasard, tu murmurais des mots confus.
Toi donc,
pauvre enfant, tu souffrais.
J'ai piété moins de paroles.
Et je parlais.
Si tu parlais.
Je parlais.
Tu parles de la cour. Oui, vraiment. Tu parlais du prince charmant. Du prince que tu n'as jamais vu seulement. Tu parlais de brillant avenir et de promesses folles. D'un grand chêne enchanté. D'un petit cœur sanglant, d'une pantoufle en verre. Tu voyais des lutins qui traînaient ta voiture.
Quoi? Rien de tout cela ne serait arrivé.
Rien, ma chère fillette.
Il n'a jamais. Je pleurais sans motif
et sans trêve.
Je vivais comme dans un rêve.
Dans un rêve.
Et je parlais
de riches parures,
d'un petit cœur sanglant,
et surtout du prince charmant.
Du prince
que tu n'as jamais vu seulement.
Je croyais d'une tâche
qui traînait ta voiture.
Je prie de ta.
Oh.
au fond du bois.
Ma femme que j'entends, pour éviter crise et gourmade, viens, retrouvons tes camarades, profitons du bon temps, tous tes chagrins sont finis, je l'espère.
Comme vous êtes bon. Mes deux filles et moi.
Il m'aime, il me l'a dit, il me l'a dit lui-même. Oh!
Well, shall I say it? And they lived happily ever after. Cendrillon and her prince have been reunited. The slipper fits. And then everyone comes to the front of the stage and says, well, we hope you've enjoyed the show. We've done our best. That's Massenet Cendrillon coming to you live from the stage of the Metropolitan Opera here in New York City.
And if the slipper fits, it's a wonderful ending.
Yes, indeed. And now here on stage are our dancers. All in red, of course, being the theme color of this show, based on that red leather-bound book of fairy tales from Eleanor Paley's childhood. Here is Donald Palumbo and our choristers, the gentlemen of the chorus first. And to think, he was up here at intermission, and there he is on stage. Donald Palumbo. Now, all these men are in their black tail coats and short pants and white powdered wigs and red sashes and hosiery. And here are the women of the chorus in these fabulous fashion victim dresses, long with oversized headdresses and poofy skirts and all sorts. Go on the website and have a look at the costumes. Oh, they're really, really spectacular.
One more beautiful and more ridiculous than the next.
And here are our six choristers who are our spirits: Leon Coble Dispenza, Sarah Heaton, Ann Nonemacher, Elizabeth Brooks, Christina Thompson Anderson, and Rosalie Sullivan. And here are the three men prancing out: our Prime Minister Jung Chul Cha, Superintendent David Lee, and the Dean of the Faculty, Peter Neckerowitz. He was the one down trying the glass slipper on everybody, which is pretty funny. Here's Bradley Garvin, the King, bass baritone from Chicago. And here are the two crazy stepsisters, Dorothea and Noemi, Maya Liani, mezzo-soprano from Israel, and Ying Fong, soprano from China. Deep bow for that. And also fashion victims, proudly. Chris Kathleen Kim, our fairy godmother. Her little spiky silver wig and silver dress. Soprano from Seoul, South Korea. Her fourth new production at the Met. She was Olympia and Hoffman, Madame Mao and Nixon. Here's Laurent Mallory, Pandolf, the beleaguered stepfather of French bass baritone. He just sang Capulet last night in Romeo and Juliet. And here is Stephanie Blythe, Madame de la Altière, mezzo-soprano from upstate New York, greatly beloved Met artist. And we're delighted she'll be back next season for two operas. She'll be in Puccini's Il Trittico and the Marquise of Birkenfeld in Fille de Regiment.
Another fun role.
Yep, at Yabba Dabba Doo. And here is Alice Cooter, Prince Charming. English mezzo. We've heard her in so many operas here. Hansel and Gretel, Julius Caesar, Idomeneo. She was an exterminating angel last fall, which you heard last week. Mm-hmm. So this is Alice Friedrich. And here is Joyce DiDonato, our Cendrillon. Mezzo from Kansas City. Another greatly beloved Met artist. She is Adelgisa in Norma to open our season last fall. Next season, she'll be back as Sesto in Mozart's La Clemenza di Tito. And guess what? Tomorrow, she'll be hosting the Met's National Council Grand Finals Concert with all those hopeful young artists. And now the whole cast is bowing together. My, there's a lot of red and white and black and all sorts of colors on our stage. Beautiful bows when it's this colorful. And now Joyce is headed off to get our maestro. Here's Bertrand de Billy. This is his eighth opera for the Met. He just finished Louisa Miller. He's currently conducting Tosca and Cendrillon. And he will be back with us next season to conduct Puccini's Il Trittico. Can't wait for that. And now here's the whole cast bowing at the front of the stage once again. It's nice to see there are tons of kids in the audience this afternoon. Yay. And now they're all, the cast is applauding for the chorus. That's very nice. Kathleen Kim, step down bow. Laurent Mallory. Stephanie Blythe. Alice Coote. And Joyce DiDonato. Big smiles with everybody and waves to the audience. And now here they all come once again. The music producer for this Metropolitan Opera broadcast is David Frost, and the operations director is John Kurzweil. Ed Hartley, Robert Hewitt, and Jason Crystal are our broadcast engineers. Our senior radio producer is Ellen Keel, and she's our editor, too. The show producer is John Bischoff. The producer is William Berger. The associate producer is Lee Ellen Vim. Here they all come for one more bow, our cast. We have production assistants from Yolanda Williams and Geza Kudlak. The broadcast stage manager is Michael Griebel. The executive producers are Mia Bongiovanni and Elena Park. The Metropolitan Opera's music director designate is Yannick Nezet-Séguin. And the general manager is Peter Gelb. And everybody just turns and waves and walks off the stage together. That's nice. So Ira, I am so glad that our radio audience finally got to share with us Cendrillon for the first time in its sparkling, happy ending.
Oh, the subject fit Massenet well as the glass slipper fits Cendrillon. Now, next week we have another couple we root for, but, you know, doesn't work out quite as well for them.
Yes, please do join us next Saturday at 1 o'clock for our final live broadcast of the season, Gounod's Romeo et Juliet, starring Eileen Perez and Charles Castronovo. Placido Domingo conducts the Metropolitan Opera Orchestra and Chorus.
And the good news is we will be broadcasting that at 6:30 here on BBC Radio 3. Thanks to our American colleagues Mary Jo Heath and Ira Siff. The Metropolitan Opera broadcast season is supported by Toll Brothers, the Annenberg Foundation, the Neubauer Family Foundation, and the Vincent A. Stabile Endowment for Broadcast Media, and broadcast here through an arrangement with the European Broadcasting Union. We've contemporary music for you on BBC Radio 3 in just over 15 minutes with a chance to hear a concert featuring a major new work by Tayonde Braxton. The American composer is also a member of the art rock band Battles. That's in Here and Now at 10 o'clock. Between now and then, I've decided to stay in France, but go back from the romantic era of Massenet to the Baroque period. A music from François Couperin. He's the subject of tomorrow afternoon's early music show, which will feature an interview with the harpsichordist Cadel Chaurasi, who's just released Couperin's complete works for harpsichord. This is one of the suites written for the court of Louis XIV between 1714 and 15. It's sometimes played on a solo harpsichord, but here it's the combined forces of Les Concerts de Nation on their period instruments. Jordi Savall directs Le Quatrième Concert. French dance suite from the early 18th century in the court of Louis XIV. More for sitting and listening to, I think, and enjoying, rather than actually breaking out a sweat to. Prelude allemande, courante française, courante à l'italienne, Sadaband, Brigadon and Forlan from the quatrième concert, from the four royal concerts written for the Sun King and performed there by Les Concerts des Nations, directed as ever by Jordi Savall. And there's lots more music by François Couperin on the Early Music Show, which is tomorrow afternoon at 2 o'clock.
Across one night, immerse yourself in a magical nocturnal concert with singers who have flown across continents to be there. A wild and remarkable performance between musicians and songbirds. Nightingales, presented by Verity Sharp. Starts next Sunday night at 12:30 and continues through to early Monday morning on BBC Radio 3.